The following program is produced by the Tech Talk Radio Network.
Hey, it's Cindy Margolis, the most downloaded woman, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. And visit me on my website, cindymargolis.com. Thanks, you guys. Love you.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Justin Lemme.
I'm Andy Taylor. Thank you for being here. We are the show that talks about computers,
technology,
and the internet. Happy to be here. I just thought it was so cool this past week because I know that you were having problems with your dash cam.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had some issues with mine, notably the heat.
Yep.
You know, this is going to happen to a lot of people as it's gotten hot across the entire country. Mm-hmm. I think St. Louis, it was like 105. Which is
New York City's 100, and they're really humid up there too.
And it's only 98 in Tucson.
It's a dry heat. It's a dry heat.
But you know, you got to be really careful about your electronics you keep in the car. And I had a dash cam that sat right in the window for 3 days when it was 198 degrees.
Oh, yeah, it seems like it. Yeah, well, probably inside it was.
Yeah, and
inside the car.
And it ended up, you know, taking out that particular dash cam. So, you know, I got another one. I've been using that. But this past week, you got a chance to try a new one, and you're pretty happy with it?
Yeah. So back about, was it the CES of 2016, we talked to Cobra.
Yep.
And Cobra was awesome to give out the dash cam, the CDR 955 HD, which has Bluetooth in it. And
how do you use the Bluetooth? What's that?
It pairs to your phone, and then you use the Cobra app. And the Cobra app is kind of like a Waze type of thing where people can report, you know, speed traps, speed cameras, or whatever, and it will show up on the display of the dash cam. Like, hey, speed trap ahead, or, you know, photo light up ahead, or
right.
Stuff like that. The dash cam itself is great, and I had it for a good year, and the USB charging port on it started to go out. And it wasn't like I was unplugging it, plugging it back in all the time. I mean, it was always just plugged in, just right. Sitting there. But yeah, something happened with the USB port, and I could no longer charge it. And so, you know, I contacted Cobra and I said, hey, you know, I'd like to see about getting some support for this. No, don't worry about it. We'll send you the new one, the new dash cam that we got.
Very cool.
And send me back the broken one. We'll take care of it. So they were awesome enough to send out the CDR 895D, which is a dual dash cam.
I hadn't heard about this one.
Yeah, so it's got the front dash cam, which looks very similar to the one I had previously, but it also has a connector to a rear dash cam that mounts to, you could either mount it right to your rear view mirror to look, you know, through the back of the car, like your back seat or whatever.
Right.
Like if you're a taxi driver or something, you know, and you want to record your passengers.
That's
or,
cool.
But or it does have a 20-foot cable that I actually ran down under the seats, brought it up into the back window of my Explorer. Now, a Ford Explorer is a pretty big SUV, so yeah. I used most of the cable, but I was able to get it up there, mount it to the back, and now I can record out the front and I can record out the back, which is awesome.
How does it? Does it do it like as a split screen?
It's split screen. Well, it does two different files. So you are getting a full res image on both the front and back camera. It's just that on the display of the dash cam, you're going to be seeing the dual split screen.
Nice.
But it does do two files. So if somebody comes up and rear ends me, I have a dash cam recording the rear ending. You know, I can look back at it and say, look, you were on your phone texting. You weren't paying attention.
Oh, my. Yeah, it'll actually see them.
Absolutely.
Just before their face goes, oh.
Yeah, exactly.
That is awesome. Now, how's the quality on the rear camera? Because I know the front cameras on the Cobra models are great. I think I got a full HD resolution out of that. Not 720,
yeah.
1080.
Yeah, so this one does, like the other one I had, does 1080p at 30 frames a second. Or what I've actually done is I've lowered it down to 720p at 60 frames a second. So you get smoother image by having it at 60 frames a second. And honestly, you're not losing that much quality between the 1080p and mm-hmm. the 720p. And it's not to say anything bad about Cobra, but with the quality of the camera. I mean, it's a dash cam.
Yeah.
It's not a Hollywood film camera. You're not going to notice a difference between 1080 and 720 on a dash cam. You're going to get a better, smoother image with the 60 frames a second. Now, the back camera does 720p at 30 frames.
Oh, that's not
by default.
Yeah, that's not too
bad.
And again, you're just capturing the stuff that's happening behind you.
Which exactly.
If somebody rear ends you, this is great for the insurance companies.
Oh, so. Yeah. I'm just waiting for the moment somebody does it, and I'll be like, well, I got you dead to rights.
I did tell you the story about me hooking up the camera. Did I tell the story in the air when I was just before I went to Idaho?
I
hooked up the camera, and that morning I caught an accident right there on my dash cam.
Oh yeah. You did say that. You did.
So, I mean, you never know. It's one of those things. You're on the road. You never know what's going to happen. But at least this way, you have that extra protection. Whether it be you or maybe another car that you've witnessed something happen.
And I'm gonna do a full write-up review for the website. I've got some pictures.
Yeah, I was gonna say, is there any way you can capture some of that video, and then that way we can kind of show on the website the video and how that works?
Yeah, I mean, I could take some of the actual video that it's recorded and you know, give a little sample of it.
That'd be cool.
But I also have some pictures of the installation of the unit itself. So I'll put all that up on the website.
Can you take it and, like, because it has crash detection on it, right?
Could you? It does also have that. Yes.
Yeah. Could you take it and run your car into a wall and let's see if it actually comes alive?
Wait, I'm sorry. Say it again. What? I totally missed that.
You can run the car into the wall and see if the crash detection really works.
You know, how about no? I don't think your Tech Talk Radio insurance company would cover the cost of a brand new 2017 Ford Explorer.
Probably not.
No, but you know, honestly, hitting a pothole, not even a pothole, just a small little bump in the road, it sends the thing into emergency mode.
That's
where,
cool.
Now, emergency mode is whatever it's recording at that moment. It flags that file so it will never be deleted. Because the way it's recording is it records, and then as the memory card fills up, it deletes the older files to make room for the newer files. But if you have anything in emergency mode, it will never delete those files.
The nice thing is you can find dash cams now relatively inexpensively. And of course, the Cobra line, you can find them on their website as well. And they have different models depending on what
sure.
you want.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the premier model, I believe, for this generation. Of dash cams for them.
Be able to record forward and back. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. So the good news is we did recover our blog, at least part of it. Now, we told the story about what happened is, you know, we've been hosting with GoDaddy since forever. And we're not on a managed hosting plan with them. And unfortunately, somebody over there had changed our server. And when they changed our server, it caused some problems with our database, and we thought we lost our entire blog. Now, luckily, I went in and backed up the database for the blog, and I have the backed up files for the blog. Now, the problem is we got to a point where we got so frustrated in the many calls to tech support and the many emails, the chats, that I finally said, that's it, I'm done. I'm not going to keep all of this. And it's a shame because Slick has written stuff. You've written stuff. Mm-hmm. I've written stuff. Former show hosts have written stuff. The blog goes all the way back to 2006. So we decided to just blow it up. And we did. But when I went ahead and decided to reset up WordPress, we redo a brand new blog, I had this weird thought that, hey, what happens if I import with my brand new database, import the old database? What would happen?
So why don't you try it out? No, you did.
So I ended up taking the files that I had saved out of the blog directory because we ran out of subdomain and uploaded it. And then I went ahead and imported the database. And wouldn't you know, it doesn't look exactly the same. There's some tweaking we're going to do, but actually we're going to be changing everything anyways. The blog was back. And
cool.
There's some missing graphics and, you know, it's just we missed in a backup. But other than that, we're pretty pleased that we have it. Now,
awesome.
While I've been doing the research, though, I found a company out there that helps protect your website. If you have a website, you manage a website, and I don't care if it's a tiny little blog, your website could be used to attack big corporate websites, big corporate blogs. They call them basically zombie websites. They turn your website into a zombie, and you have no idea.
How is that possible?
Well, Logan Kipp is a product evangelist with SiteLock and is standing by with us on the line. Logan, thanks for coming on Tech Talk Radio.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, I think the numbers can be quite scary when people decide, hey, I want to go ahead and make a website. And this could be everything from, you know, their hobby of their favorite cars to photography to maybe something they sell online to a professional website. SiteLock is one of those companies that helps protect the consumer and the website developer. Can you tell us a little bit about the company?
Yeah, so SiteLock is a global leader in website security solutions. We currently serve over 6 million customers worldwide. We specialize in cloud-based technologies that include malware detection and automatic malware removal, as well as actual firewalls for websites. Our mission is actually to protect every website on the internet, and we're making some good headway to get there.
Now, it seems to me that no matter what size website that people have, and like I said, it could be, you know, something just to promote what they do, one-page site, those could be targets for people that want to hack that. Why would they want to hack a site that's small like that?
Well, you see, I think there's a common misconception that is a big part of the problem surrounding website, and that is that you have to be big, you have to be popular in order to become a viable target, and that simply isn't true. One of the most common questions I get is, well, why did they target me? And
right. The
easiest answer there is, well, probably not for the reasons you think. One of the most common reasons that websites, big and small, are targeted are simply for their resources. So server resources are one of the many currencies traded in the cyber criminal world.
Right.
So your website, your server, could be used to leverage an attack against another server, another innocent server. So it's not necessarily sensitive info like passwords or credit card data that they're looking for, but your website itself can be a weapon.
So it actually, you could turn your website into a zombie almost, where it's used, and you have all these zombie sites out there collectively used to attack a site. And of course, it's like having more troops, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the larger your army, the more devastating the impact. It's a pretty simple equation.
Some data that was put out recently in a study that SiteLock put together was really surprising, that 99% of hacked websites are comprised of sites that maybe we don't expect. Even nonprofits can be used for this kind of dirty deed.
Absolutely. And you're seeing that more and more, especially recently. And I think part of that is because people are finally giving this subject more attention. You're seeing nonprofits. You're seeing the healthcare industry targeted. You're seeing the hospitality industry targeted. The reason for these is quite simply, and most often, because they are easy targets. These are places that cyber criminals may not have necessarily looked before, but now that they're seeing all these wonderful resources, why not?
Couldn't this also be dangerous for a website or even a blog that collects data from people to, you know, where they want to use in their future marketing? If that's all stored there on their site, that could also be targeted. And of course, that can be a problem for the consumers that visit the website.
You're seeing that more often these days as well. There's these small to medium-sized businesses that may have smaller data troves, but it's data nonetheless, and it has value in the underworld. On the darknet, these things are being sold. So whether it just be first name, last name, and email address, that still has a price tag, and someone was willing to pay for that. So you do see those smaller websites being targeted more often, and the lesser of the sensitive information is still being targeted because they're smaller.
We're talking with Logan Kipp from SiteLock. Logan, we've heard of instances where web developers suddenly find strange PHP files or other files on their site. Could this be an indication that maybe they've got an issue they need to take care of?
The very first thing I would tell you is you should be concerned. Anything that's popping up on your website that is outside the expected behavior should draw your attention. You should take a look and see, hey, what's going on over here? If you didn't put them there, something did.
Right.
My recommendation would be to immediately seek a consultation with a security professional to establish what those files are doing, whether its purpose is in fact nefarious. But it could also just be maybe your content management system has some new features they added. Each is possible, but without the keen eye to understand the difference between what is potentially malicious and what is completely harmless, it can take a very trained eye to do that.
You know, I can imagine for anybody that has a site, whether it be a small site or large corporate site, that actually pulling up the website and seeing that it's been defaced has got to be a terrible feeling. But it seems like now those that are infecting sites or attacking sites don't want the web developer, they don't want anybody to know that the site has actually been defaced or hacked.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. That's what the data is telling us. Defacements don't actually account for a massive percentage of the type of breaches we see. In the majority of cases, they don't want to be found. Based on the data, it looks like they're focusing more and more on being able to retain a persistent presence, which of course would require that they remain undetected. It's a cold. You don't go and see a doctor until the symptoms get just bad enough in order to make you get out of bed and finally go see a doctor.
Exactly.
And by then, in the case of malware, it could be too late.
Well, I know for many that finally decide, hey, I want to do a website or a blog for my car club or, again, a nonprofit. And they decide to go ahead and take on the challenge. And now working with WordPress has been extremely easy with so many different tools out there for the web developer to actually create some really fun, great, visually looking sites. But there's always been kind of I don't know if it's a misnomer that, you have a WordPress site, you're more likely to get attacked, you're more likely to have issues. Is that still the case?
You know, that's actually a really common question. And I would say that it wasn't necessarily ever the case. In fact, it seems to be the misconception, and I think that misconception is driven by the fact that blog systems like WordPress do power, close to a third of the entire web these days. I think WordPress alone is around 28%. I definitely would not say WordPress more inherently vulnerable than any other type of website, but on that same token, I would say that your behavior as a website administrator will dictate how vulnerable you are. If you install more plugins and more themes, you are, of course, increasing the complexity of the website, potentially increasing that attack surface that a hacker is interested in. So you want to, of course, limit what you're installing. The more you just lob onto the website,
right,
the more potential there is for an issue.
Well, it's kind of the way we operate on our computers at home. The more you download just because you saw it and you thought it was cool, the more danger you could be running into.
Absolutely.
Now, for those that don't know, there's some terms that I saw in the report that SiteLock put out. Shell programs. Can you kind of give us a rundown what a shell program does?
Yeah, so a shell is kind of like a cyber criminal control panel. You and I might go and manage our website through popular control panel software like Plesk or cPanel or some of the other proprietary panels put out by hosting providers, whereas a cyber criminal who has gained access to your website does not necessarily have access to that type of administrative control, at least not ease of control like that. So something called a shell program is put in place in order to give them a web-facing interface that allows them to control administrator functionality of your website.
Yeah, they could log on. They could have this. Somebody else has got an actual program that they can do whatever they want with.
Exactly. It's the illicit equivalent of your control panel system.
All right. Another term we hear quite a bit is backdoor files. What are backdoor files?
Backdoor files, that denotes that the file is allowing access of some kind to an outside party other than the intended administrator. So some illicit control is in place, allowing an outside party to control resources within the website.
All right. Now, I'm wondering now, somebody decides they want to build a site, their real best protection really is again, proactive, not reactive. And that's kind of where SiteLock comes in. Can they talk to their hosting provider? I mean, I know this is not something that gets installed on a user's computer. And if I'm not mistaken, it's not even installed on server side. This is something that's kind of a go-between, or is it on the server?
It's not installed to the home computer, of course. It is intended for the website. But with SiteLock specifically, all of our software is cloud-based. So nothing actually needs to be installed to your web server. There's some light configuration required in order to make sure everything communicates well. But it all runs in the cloud.
Nice.
That your website resources are dedicated to, of course, delivering the website content.
So the user, the website owner, administrator, developer, would still need to coordinate with their hosting provider, with SiteLock then running as like kind of a big blockade, like a big giant firewall protecting their system.
Correct. Yeah. So a big part of what we do is that firewall, the great firewall.
Yeah. You like that?
To act as it's a proactive solution to protect your website from actually having these breaches occur. But on the other side of that coin there, we also help customers who have already been breached. In fact, I'd say that the majority of our new customers week over week are folks that have had a bad experience, and you know, they're in the middle of a breach event and they're saying, help me, what do I do?
Yeah.
In which case we're able to help them out, get them secure, remove the problem, and then put those proactive measures in place.
Well, backing up a site is going to be the responsibility of the web developer. And I know that many of the hosting providers offer plans to help them back up their systems. And I recommend everybody do that. Automatic malware protection is kind of something that that you do. How does that system work?
So we have a copy of many of the website files in our cloud that we audit, but they're typically not used for backup purposes.
Excellent. All right, so our listeners decide they want to build a site, or they want to have this added to their site. Really, what is the process? What should they do?
Well, when you want to build a website, it's important to maintain a secure development lifecycle for that website. And a part of that is auditing before you make it live. If you're going the route of, say, WordPress, if you plan to install plugins, themes, and so on, increasing the complexity of the website, you should consider doing a static application security test. And that is one of the things that we do here as well. That way, we're looking for vulnerabilities before the website is live on the internet and therefore potentially causing harm to visitors.
Great advice and a great way to be safe. Now, if somebody wants to get more information about SiteLock, can they reach out to you through the website?
Absolutely. So they can reach out through the website or through the phone number on the website. We do provide 24/7 U.S.-based phone support, so we're always here to help out.
Very good stuff. Again, SiteLock. And can they find the information on this infographic on their on your website?
Absolutely. So we've actually posted that on our blog at sitelock.com. And if they're of the WordPress flavor, we actually have a special security blog just for them. That's wpdistrict.sitelock.com.
Very good. I hope our listeners check that out. And once again, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us about this. Because again, it's better to be proactive than reactive. I've been there. It's not a fun place to be.
Definitely not.
Yeah. Well, Logan, thank you so much for coming on Tech Talk Radio. And of course, we hope our listeners check out SiteLock. That's SiteLock. We'll have the links up on our website at techtalkradio.com. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Sounds good. You have a great one.
Nothing like having that extra layer of protection when you have a website.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, yeah, you're right. I mean, today you just can't be too secure.
And, you know, we're seeing a lot of problems with now Facebook. Have you been seeing the influx of this where people are saying, hey, friend me, and then you look at it and you look at the profile and you think, no, I'm not going to friend you.
The thing that I've been getting sometimes is, you know, you get a request from somebody that you know, and it's like, hey, you know, wants to add you as a friend. I'm like, I'm already friends with you. And so it's somebody who's basically hijacked their profile, created another profile that looks exactly the same, trying to get people to become their friend again. And for the most part, a lot of people just fall for it.
At that point, don't do it. Don't accept it.
Yeah, just of course.
And don't ever feel bad about not accepting somebody's friend request.
Yeah, I mean, people live and die by this. All of a sudden, it seems like, oh my God, do they friend me? Should I friend them back? Like, shut up.
I had a weird situation on Instagram the other day. I posted a few pictures recently, one of a big old fat chili burger from Tommy's in mm-hmm. California. Mm-hmm. Don't know if you've ever had one of those. They're
I awesome. Have. I don't like them.
You don't like them?
Oh, nope.
I just love them. And then the other was some Thai food that I had bought that was like a to-go thing. You know, you make it at home. And all of a sudden, I got a notification that I got a like from an actress, a big actress. I was like, why is she like looking at my profile?
Who?
Patricia Heaton. Now, Patricia...
What?
From Everybody Loves Raymond, right?
Of course.
And then like 10 minutes later, there's another like from Patricia Heaton. I'm like, wait a minute.
On a different photo?
On a different photo. And then, like, an hour later, I get another like on a different photo. And I'm thinking, wait a minute.
Was this the verified Patricia Heaton account?
Yeah, it was.
What?
She's got 48,000 followers. She only follows about 320 people. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. I don't get it. Well, then another friend of mine said, you know, it's probably her PR company using a bot that goes in and just goes through profiles.
Looks for keywords and stuff.
I would like to think that she's sitting there going, hey, look at this. This is pretty neat. You know, and clicking, but it's probably not the case.
Yeah, well, that's kind of interesting. That's pretty cool. So I had something a little similar. It wasn't as big a deal as yours was, but I had tweeted, I had a picture of my son Eric, and he was kind of wearing a Colorado's Rockies hat, and it was right. Like just a cute picture because he was smiling and he had a Colorado Rockies hat on, and I actually tweeted it to the Colorado Rockies, and I said, you know, as the first round pick of the 2037 MLB draft, the Colorado Rockies select this little dude.
Oh, I saw that picture. I loved it.
And they actually tweeted back at me and said, the official account, the Rockies account, said, this little dude's about to make you a lot of money.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. I like that stuff. There's a great website that we just found that's actually run from a company that provides food on grocery shelves, the whole bit. We're going to take a quick break. We come back. We're going to talk to them about their brand new website and what they intend to do with it. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Justin Lemmy. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/TechTalkers.
Now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
Actually, for your information, I'm online doing a little research.
AdventuresInMeat.com.
It's the Charmaster website. I'm taking a virtual tour of the Six Burner Platinum Edition.
Where's the grill?
We're in it. It's a steak eye view. Look at this. We're zooming into the drip tray and back up to the lava rocks. Drip tray, lava rocks. Feels sexy, don't it?
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Justin Lemmy.
Now, I know when we talk about, you know, food, there's so many different sites you can go to out there that all involve mm-hmm. recipes and cooking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of them are really well done. Others can be really difficult to weed through. I know you've used Blue Apron before, right?
We did for a while, yeah.
What did you think of that? How was that experience?
I mean, it's convenient. I mean, everything is there, and you don't get more than what you need. You know, you need some gram masala. You don't have to go out and buy a huge canister of it. You know, you can just get just the teaspoon you need for that recipe.
Yeah, because it all comes with a package for you to make and the recipe.
Everything is all perfectly proportioned out. Yeah, it's good. But the instructions, are a little bit unclear at times. Like, it'll tell you to, you know, step one, step two, step three, step four. But when you get to step four, it's like, oh, and then by this time you should have already been, you know, doing this, which should have been mentioned in step one. And you're like, really? Like, you know, so yeah, it's not the best.
As far as cost, how was it?
It's just a little bit more expensive than going to buy groceries for those same three meals.
Right.
You know, because you get three meals a week. And I mean, unless you're going to want to eat ramen, obviously that's super cheap. But if you're going to go and buy the comparable ingredients for these meals, it's probably very close to being the same price.
Well, I found a website this week, and I really wanted to share it with you because it's one of those, I want to say, a recipe site. And it's put out by the manufacturers of products that can be used in the recipes. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to Wendy's and had their big salad that they do.
What's Wendy's? Come on, dude. I don't know if you've ever been to Wendy's.
Well, I don't know if you've
this
ever...
This little place that makes burgers.
Yeah, but I don't know if you've ever had their salad.
Yes.
You know, all right, they use this dressing from T. Marzetti. And T. Marzetti, they also make dips and all kinds of stuff. Well, they've got this website now. What a great domain name. whatsfordinner.com. Huh. I mean, you're going to pull that up right now and take a look. It'll ask you
lasagna,
right? It'll ask you a quiz. You have different ethnic types of food that you can make. Indian wasn't on the list. I noticed that, but I don't think there's anything from T. Marzetti that would probably be a part of that.
Mm.
But other things are, and so we decided to reach out to them and find out a little bit about their website and what it is to put together a site like this. And standing by on the line, Stephanie Kaufman, who is with T. Marzetti Company. Stephanie, thanks for coming on Tech Talk Radio.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Now, Stephanie, tell us a little bit about T. Marzetti Company. How long have they been around?
Yeah, we are based in Columbus, Ohio. So we've been around about 40 years, a little bit more than that. Our roots are actually in the restaurant business, but we have grown over the past 40 years into a company, a family of brands. And as you mentioned, you probably would recognize Marzetti salad dressings and dips, New York Bakery frozen breads, Sister Schubert's frozen rolls, and one of our newest acquisitions is the Flat Out Flatbread.
Oh, yum.
Company.
Well,
yeah.
The dip is amazing. That's the first time I ever had anything from the company. That was some years ago. And that dip is like, you take a, you know, taste of that and you're like, wow, this is really good stuff.
Yeah. Veggie dips are one of our kind of legacy products as well. So, you know, we're proud of our products. Our vision is certainly to provide the highest quality products that we can, you know, in as many areas of the grocery store as you can find. Plus, as you mentioned, we have a really strong partnership with some restaurants in our food service business. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, Wendy's, I know that you have that salad dressing in there, and I think I've raved about that here on the show before, so that's really cool stuff. And it was neat to see that you kind of have taken the products you have and are helping people by saying, here's a website to come to, and using, you know, some of the products that we have, you could really make a great dinner. And that's the website, whatsfordinner.com. Number one, great domain name. And, you know, really, how did the idea come about?
You know, we were looking to build a cornerstone for our digital content strategy for all the brands of T. Marzetti Company. And we really recognized that consumers have become a foodie nation, right? They're very sophisticated and... you know, they're looking for inspiration, and certainly at dinner time, you know, it's kind of an age-old question of what's for dinner.
Yeah.
So we wanted to cut through that clutter and build a solution that connected with both moms and dads when they're asked that question, so that they're prepared. So the site, you know, has kind of a choose-your-own-adventure theme with the quiz where you kind of answer a few questions, and we provide you at least five recipes to start your search on, and hopefully you can find something delicious for dinner that night.
What I do like, too, is the user experience is really well laid out. Now, if somebody wants to create an ethnic type of meal, like they want to create maybe Mexican food or Italian food, and they want to go with a theme for that week, they can do this really just by going to the website and choosing what option they want to do for that week.
Yeah, we've provided it, broken down the navigation in both cuisines, so like you said, Mexican, Asian, Southern, American. And it's just not dinner. You can find breakfast, lunch, desserts. There's some great appetizer recipes on there as well. So certainly the What's for Dinner domain was inspired by search trends, but mm-hmm. we already had some recipes in our collection that we didn't want to get rid of. So we added them all in there for everyone to enjoy.
Now, Stephanie, how many different recipes, when somebody visits whatsfordinner.com, are they going to find on the site?
Yeah, today we have over 750 recipes on the site.
Wow.
With plans to add more every month. You know, like I said before, we're just not dinner. You can find other things, but, mm-hmm. You know, we definitely are looking to grow both, you know, just your kind of regular traditional recipe type content, as well as video and blogs to help with other things like kitchen tips and, you know, collections for, you know, if you're planning a dinner party or, you know, a kid's birthday party or, you know, a holiday event.
You know, it's funny because I have a friend that got a job with Tyson. He went to culinary school and got a job with Tyson, and that was his job, is develop recipes that they would be able to, you know, kind of expand to their consumer base, people who, you know, are going out and you making things with mm-hmm. chicken, et cetera. Have you kind of done the same thing in coordinating with those that are in the industry, the culinary industry, and coming up with these recipes?
Yeah, we've actually got several different sources. We've definitely partnered with an outside sourcing team that helped us develop recipes based on kind of what's going on in the foodie nation world that's trending, mm-hmm. and then combining our brands to inspire, right?
Yeah.
So whether it's quick and easy, whether it's kid-friendly, or whether it's even some more sophisticated recipes for that at-home chef who just loves to cook. So we also listen to our users. On every recipe page, you can click a couple but different buttons. You can say, yes, I definitely want to make this tonight, or no, maybe not tonight. And then that recipe gets a score. And over time, each recipe is given a score. And the higher scoring recipes are going to stay, and we're going to evolve and inspire off of those. And the lower ones, we're going to kind of cycle through and archive and continue to feed the pipeline.
I can imagine, no pun intended. I can imagine too that we would see some seasonal type of recipes as we get towards Thanksgiving and maybe towards Christmas, of things that could be made around those holidays.
Absolutely. That's where our collections and menus section will come in. And, you know, when we launched the site in mid-May, we were focused on dinners for Father's Day, you know, your Memorial Day picnics. Absolutely, you're going to see tons of Thanksgiving, Christmas, Super Bowl party recipes and collections for sure.
Great
we
stuff.
Also are gonna, oh, sorry.
No, I was going to say, really, it's great stuff. It's a great way to, like I say, to make it an easy process. And now we're seeing more and more technology in the kitchen, not only with the appliances, but bringing the ability to bring these recipes right to the countertop with laptops, tablets, even, you know, embedded refrigerators with the ability to pull in recipes there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we certainly, when we started this site, it was mobile first all the way. We heard consumers tell us in research that they mostly are bringing their phones and tablets into the kitchen. And so we knew we had to make this, you know, mobile first and as user-friendly as possible. You don't want to be touching your screen a lot.
Well, exactly. And it's funny because you mentioned that we had, I think about 2 years ago, when we started to see the iPad grow and tablets, and we were talking about the fact that they were in kitchens, we started to see gloves that were being sold just for that purpose, for people who wanted to use their tablets while they were in the kitchen, that were used so you didn't get, you know, the Mazzetti dip on the screen itself.
Yes, absolutely. We definitely were trying to make, you know, a user-friendly experience, no matter, you know, which device you were on or where you were at that moment.
Now, is there a cost involved in this, Stephanie?
No, absolutely not. It is free to everyone to enjoy. You can create an account. You can save your favorite recipes. There's a weekly planner tool. You can download shopping lists. So it's certainly free to the consumer, but as a company, we're definitely going to continue to invest in building this, you know, site in the future, adding more enhancements, more features as we go.
Well, it's great stuff. Again, will visitors then maybe find some coupons for some of the T. Marzetti products?
Yeah, we definitely have coupons in our future. You can always find coupons for our sites or our products on, you know, other sites like coupons.com, shopper apps like Ibotta and things like that year round. But there'll definitely be coupons coming to What's for Dinner in the future.
Great deal. Well, you know, we recommend our listeners take a look at whatsfordinner.com and any leftovers, they can feel to bring it to bring it by the studio. We'll be happy.
Absolutely. That sounds like a good deal.
Awesome. Stephanie Kaufman, thank you so much for talking to us.
Great. Thanks for having me, Andy.
Yeah. So, I mean, the website, that's actually really cool. I just went there. I just clicked through three different things. What are you cooking? I said poultry. Uh-huh. I'm in a mood for American food, and I have up to an hour to make it. And boom, chicken noodle soup recipe.
Perfect. And so you just tell it what ingredients you do have, and it'll come up with the recipe.
Not even that. You don't even have to do the ingredients you have. It just tells you three different selections, and boom, it's right there. Like,
very
you don't
nice.
Have to. You don't have to actually say what you have for ingredients. I know that there was another website. I can't remember the name of it right off the top of my head, but it was something about like what's in my refrigerator or something like that.
Right.
And you go there, and you can you put the ingredients that you have in your refrigerator at that moment or your cupboard at that moment, and it goes through its database and comes up with a similar recipe. Like, hey, you can make this with what you have right now. So it's probably similar to this, but I like this. This is cool. Like,
whatsfordinner.com. Now, I don't know if you remember, last week on the show, we talked about the NSA holding these cyber camps at universities across the country.
Uh-huh.
Right? Well, apparently, this is where people need to be focusing when it comes to work. Now, you're in this industry. You're in the industry of, you know, technology, et cetera. But cybersecurity is something that is of utmost importance. We're going to take a quick break. We come back, we're going to talk with representatives from IBM about just how many people are needed to work in this cybersecurity industry. We'll find that out next with Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Justin Lemmy. You can find us on Twitter at Tech Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
And now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
Someone in Sichuan Province, China, is using his computer to turn our lights on and off.
Well, that's handy. Here's a question. Why?
Because we can.
Hey, Bill Nye, the science guy here. Whenever I am listening to the radio, especially Tech Talk Radio, it's just such a party.
All right, welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Justin Lemmy.
I'm Andy Taylor. And about last week's show, mm-hmm. we talked a little bit about the National Security Agency, NSA,
yes.
holding cyber camps, which they're doing across the country. They just did one at the University of Arizona, which actually I think it was taking place this weekend. And there's others that will happen throughout the year. This is to kind of get people into the whole idea of just the importance of how many people are going to be needed for cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
And we think, well, what does that mean? That just be installing antivirus software on your computer.
No.
You know, there are people that have to engineer that software, that have to engineer hardware.
That's just a cornerstone of it.
Well, yeah, and you work a lot with routers. You work a lot with networks. I mean, security has to be utmost important to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you have somebody that is the key security person? Or really, it's all your responsibility to make that?
We have an entire team dedicated to security.
Wow. So it is important.
It is very important. And like we talked about in an earlier segment there about the website security. I mean, those are cybersecurity as well. Yeah, absolutely. It is extremely important.
I think also we're going to see a lot of this in the mobile platform as well. Mobile technology is going to need experts in this field. Well, those experts are needed, and standing by on the line with us is Diana Kelly, Global Executive Security Advisor for IBM. And recently here in Tucson, the NSA hosted a cyber camp at the University of Arizona, and they've been doing this all over the country. And it seems that there is a shortage of cyber professionals, and Diana is going to tell us a little bit about this. Diana, how big is this shortage of cybersecurity professionals today?
Yeah, Andy, that's a great question. And the reality is that we're looking at between 1.5 to 2 million open headcount in cybersecurity coming up in the next few years, which is, you know, that's a tremendous number. When you think about 80% of online cyber crimes are enacted by organized cyber criminals, they're filling their ranks. They've got people in the chairs, and we're looking at a situation where the defenders aren't able to hire enough people to fill the chairs on our side, the good side.
Why do you think we're seeing this shortage today? Is this because, you know, people really haven't taken it seriously over the last 10 years, and now we're suddenly realizing that just how much money can be stolen and how much data can be compromised? And of course, there is a war going on that this could be used against many of the allied governments.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, that in a lot of cases, people didn't understand the enormity of the situation right now. You know, it's almost $500 million of illegal profits that the cyber criminals are getting away with every year. So we're seeing how large the problem is. There are large events like WannaCry that get into the news that start to raise awareness. But up until a few years ago, many students didn't understand that cybersecurity may be a career that they could go into, and many professionals didn't understand either. And that's why it's really nice to see what's happening in a lot of organizations. They're starting to understand that, well, there's white collar and there's blue collar. We now know that there's new collar jobs, especially in cyber security, where skills and aptitude are some of the most important experiences that you need to be successful in the job.
I love that term, new collar. That's a great way to use it. Now, how is the technology changing, though? I mean, this is something that, as us in the technology industry have seen stuff changes so rapidly, I'm sure that it's the same case with going after cyber criminals and protecting companies.
Yeah, I mean, you make an excellent point. You know, technology, if you look at 20 years ago, you know, PCs that were tethered on desktops, too, we've now got these incredibly powerful computers in our hands with our smartphones. So, and we're looking at IoT, the Internet of Things, and that's bringing, you know, these smart technologies into our homes and refrigerators and in televisions, for example. So we have to keep up and understand that as there are more kinds of things and systems to attack, that the cyber criminals are finding ways in. So we as the defenders have to get much smarter about building very secure, resilient systems and being able to monitor our networks and systems to find and contain attacks as quickly as possible.
Now, with the NSA doing this cyber camp at the University of Arizona and many universities across the country, are they utilizing this to say, listen, this can be a fun career, and this is something that we need. They're going to need to fill seats. Is this a great way to reach out to people?
There are anything that's reaching out to students and helping them understand what the job is about, and you know what they can do to help is something that is very good to promote more people getting into the field. Yeah, it's an incredibly fascinating field. It's a well-paying field, and there's a lot of room for advancement. So a number of different programs, as you mentioned, universities have programs. There are online programs like Hacker High School, for example, Hacker High,
right,
where students can get involved. DHS actually has some online training. So a lot of different opportunities, a lot of career fairs going on around the country to help engage and excite, you know, the next generation of cybersecurity defenders and leaders.
So say I'm somebody like, say a radio DJ that has gone through a big career change. If I want to learn how to you know, get into this profession, what kind of education training am I going to be going through?
Yeah, so yes, please consider joining our ranks. We need all the great defenders and smart people we can get. As I had mentioned, there are some online training, you know, Hacker High, DHS, also SANS. There are certification programs that you can look into from companies like ISC Squared and ISACA. And, you know, there are different community programs around the country. Different schools are offering different levels between certificate all the way up through advanced degrees in cybersecurity. And, you know, one of the things that very often people don't really think about but can help quite a bit is reach out to a mentor or a leader in the field. You don't have to ask them to be your mentor for years, but just say, hey, can I talk to you for 15 or 20 minutes? Can you give me your advice? You know, you may find that really opens up new ways of thinking and new opportunities.
Now, when we think of the jobs that cybersecurity experts could have, what are the different, I guess you could say, courses that people can go through in life with this technology?
Question, because it really brings up one of the things that a lot of people don't understand about cyber is that it doesn't have to be all looking at screens and hands-on keyboards. You know, it's great if you know how to code. It's wonderful if you're a fantastic security analyst. But we need skill sets in so many areas in cyber. So, for example, if you're interested in how the brain works and the mind works in psychology, that could actually help with understanding the psychology of attackers and hackers.
Wow.
We need people, right?
Yeah.
You know, we need people, math professionals, because that's the basis for cryptography. So if you're a mathematician, you could be very important in cyber. If you think visually and creatively and you love graphics, for example, one of our big issues in cyber is trying to help explain these very complex concepts that can be scary to people in ways that are easily digestible by the non-technical. So we need great graphic designers. You know, just a few examples. Fantastic writers are needed. I was an English major in college, and I graduated knowing how to, you know, write poetry and how to write code. And now I have a career in cyber. So a lot of different skill sets really can come into play as we're building our defense in cyber.
I know when some of the local TV stations asked us about WannaCry when that came out, and we basically said, you know, this is just the start of it. It's not going to end. We're going to see more variants of this type of attack on, you know, companies and governments. What do you see as far as where some of the problems are going to be when it comes to cyber attacks? Are we going to go more towards the mobile front as well? Are we going to see more attacks on people's personal devices?
Predict exactly where they're going to go. We do know, though, as the old adage is, why do bank robbers rob banks? Because that's where the money is.
Yeah, because of there.
We know. Yeah, exactly. You know, our digital assets are online, so that's where the cyber criminals are moving towards. They're a well-oiled machine. How they're going to attack will change, but they will look at some of the aspects that they're looking at are the fact that they have access now to so many more devices to take over when you look at the Internet of Things. And they know that they can infect large numbers of systems, as we've seen in outbreaks like WannaCry. So exactly how they're going to pivot, it's hard to tell. But will they continue to pivot and continue to attack? That's for sure.
Now, who are some of the companies that are going to be looking and filling some of these? I mean, have we got some companies that have not yet started up? Or are we looking at some of the big players like IBM, maybe some of the other security companies like Cisco, are they going to be hiring as well?
Well, I'm proud to say that at IBM since 2015, 20% of the hires at IBM Security have been these new-collar jobs where we look at skills and aptitude, and we are always looking for the best and the brightest to join IBM. And if you want to look for more on that, IBM.com/jobs.
Once again, that's IBM.com/jobs, and we'll find that link up on our website at techtalkradio.com. Thank you so much, Diana, for letting us know about this.
Thank you so much, Andy.
Now, if you want to take a look at some of the schools and universities that are offering programs in learning more about cybersecurity, California State University, Sacramento, Cal State University, San Bernardino, Capital Technology University, Carnegie Mellon University, many of the colleges and universities out there now offer information on getting cyber degrees. Now, you can check out this website, cyberdegrees.org, just one of the many that are out there. Also, check out the NSA, the National Security Agency, partnered with the Department of Homeland Security, doing the National Centers for Academic Excellence in Cyber Defense. And they have programs that they've put together for this. And again, you'll be able to find those at nsa.gov. And of course, so we told you about the cyber camps last week on the show. We'll have a link up on our website at techtalkradio.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, on Instagram as well. If you're on Snapchat, feel free to follow me, AndyTaylor520. I'll follow you right back. Once in a while, we post some very techie things. Sometimes it's just goofy stuff from in and around our area. Either way, the best place to connect with us is going to be techtalkradio.com. Sign up and subscribe to our shows on Spreaker as well, and you'll find that link there on the front page of our website. Now, coming up, it is our website of the week. Justin's got a great website. He ran down the hall when I started talking about NSA. But he's going to share with you a website of the week that will kind of give you a pinpoint when it comes to news. And if you're one of those that likes to find out what's going on in the news, he'll share that with you. Again, it's all coming up here on Tech Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
And now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
Told there's a glitch in our internet webcast. So all of you out there, type control/:\alt.escape, and you'll be fine.
Perfect. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Justin Lemmy.
And this is the moment of the show we reserve. And, you know, we actually had an email this week. And mm-hmm. Has it been about a year since we did, the name that hardware and all the games?
Yeah.
Saying they were hoping we would bring that back at some point.
Well, I want to. Definitely. That was a lot of fun.
Certainly should. But this is the point we do the website of the week. It's a website that we found that maybe you haven't found yet that we want to share with you. Now, while we could probably say our earlier website, whatsfordinner.com.
That would be a good category, yeah.
Could be good. I know that you have been chomping at the bit to share this one.
Yes, I ran across this other site. I thought it was actually pretty cool. It's liveuamap.com, and that would be live, the letter U, A, map. liveuamap.com. What that is you can do USA, Ukraine, Middle East, Europe, Asia, world, and it presents to you a world map or a USA map, but it has icons for stories that are happening around that area. So,
like news stories.
Like news stories, yes. So instead of having to just go through a whole list of news stories on a newspaper or a news website, you go here and there'll be an icon over the top of let's say Los Angeles.
Right.
And I'm like, okay. So I zoom into Los Angeles and I see it, and the icon represents a little sad face, and I float my cursor over it, and it says, Chester Bennington, the lead singer of Linkin Park, has committed suicide, which unfortunately did just happen.
Yeah.
So that happened in Los Angeles. Or I can go over to Idaho. Police are investigating a homicide that occurred last week in a rural part of the county. And so it's regional news, but on a big map scale.
Wow.
And so it's actually pretty cool. Again, it's liveuamap.com. Live, the letter U, the letter A, map.com.
Right, and this is our outro music. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for this week's Tech Talk Radio. We invite you to check us out on the web at techtalkradio.com. Also, we're on Twitter.
Yes, we are at Tech Talk Radio.
Very good. And you'll be able to find that link for Live View as well up on our website. Justin, have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. You too, Andy. We'll see you guys later.